As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to The Athletic NBA Show,
Monday through
on The Athletic Podcast Network.
From the Golden Gate to the New York Bay.
What I have access to is a bit different than the public.
Tamper with you.
Welcome to Tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Amick,
Anthony Slater, and Fred Katz.
To be able to bring people together.
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league
is not talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
The trial you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
I didn't tamper with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened. I'm just telling you what happened.
Here's your host, Sam Amick.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show Network. I'm Sam Amick, NBA national writer at The Athletic, here deep in the regular season with our guys, Fred Katz out east, Anthony Slater out west. We're going to get into it like always. Gentlemen, looking good. What's going on, fellas?
Nada. Maybe people are listening to this afterwards, and they're listening to it on Election Day where there'll be no NBA games. But how about the way the NBA laid out this Monday schedule? It's all 30 teams playing 15 games, nobody tipping at the same time. It's just every 15 minutes there will be a tip-off from 7 Eastern to what, like 10:30 p.m. Eastern?
It's a little stressful, Fred. I'm not going to lie. We joke about, you know, how you love being organized. Sometimes I'm not organized enough, but I have a little OCD as well. You know, trying to keep track of every game in 15-minute staggered increments. You know, I feel like Steve Kerr trying to finish or figure out his rotations here, buddy.
Steve Kerr catching a stray. Should Jared Greenberg get a shout out? Right, he's doing like the red zone style.
Yeah, what's
crunch
it called?
Time.
What are they calling it?
Yeah.
Crunch time. Yeah,
crunch time.
I was gonna say it is perfect for a red zone situation.
We'll get on the NBA app tonight. I mean, I'm not trying to give free pub here.
I was going to say, Jacinda Ortiz from the NBA's PR office is loving this podcast right now, Slater.
The one thing I will say is I would like for that to succeed, because I would like that to be like a nightly option when, you know, you're flipping around the games. I'd rather the TV does flipping for me.
Does he sound
we good?
Sounds like it would be like an Elon Musk quote. The TV does the tipping.
Yeah, let's
flipping
not talk about that.
You,
he's you know, he's messing up my favorite social media platform.
I've been had by so many fake Elon Musk Twitter accounts because they just all seem real.
Fair. All right, I'm ending it there. We're not going down that road. On this week's episode of Tampering, gentlemen, we are going to talk about our respective victory laps and storylines that we saw one way going into the season and feel like we may have gotten correct, and also our premature victory laps, the ones that it appears we got wrong, and as always, get into the recent events as well. We will eventually talk about all things Brooklyn Nets. I had a piece today where I tried to do an executive poll, talked to 11 different front office folks, actually 10 front office, one owner, about the Kyrie Irving situation, but basketball-wise, his future, what all of this, you know, latest round of chaos, you know, with him promoting an anti-Semitic documentary and being suspended by the Nets and now being in limbo again, what that does to his market. Is Kevin Durant going to eventually ask for a trade again? Even if he doesn't, might the Nets think about tearing it down and moving him anyway? So we'll get into the Nets stuff. But in terms of the on-court action that's less dramatic, Mr. Katz, I'm going to throw it to you. And by the way, I've gotten like 6 minutes into this pod without having to pay to the swear jar with that guy in L.A. Who wears purple and gold. So I'll try my best on this week's pod not to talk about the Lake Show. But you have a victory lap that you want to take. I think you're very excited about this.
We're all taking victory laps today. Fred's lead off.
He's more enthusiastic, though.
Sam, I was going to start with a victory lap, and I was going to talk about the Cavs, who I've been pumping for months. But you led me into another thing, so I'm just veering off elsewhere.
He's pivoting from his own plane.
The revival of Russell Westbrook?
So a thing that I was wrong about, Sam, was that I was not going to, you guys know exactly where I'm going. A thing I was wrong about is that I didn't think I was going to have to put any money in the Russell Westbrook square drive during at least in November. And I'm throwing my money in there right now.
Hey, here he is. Welcome aboard.
Russell Westbrook off the bench. I mean, I think we all thought that Russell Westbrook coming off the bench was the ideal role for him. And that's part of the reason why everyone talked about him going to the bench so much. He could look the best if he was just going to be able to be a sort of instant offense guy who was able to come in and row second units for 12 minutes. And he could play the way that we've seen him grow accustomed to playing for years and years. And it would actually be acceptable, because in those scenarios, what's best for him would be what's best for the teams, as long as he keeps, you know, kind of propped up at an acceptable level. 5 games off the bench, he's averaging 19 points, 7 assists, 6 boards. He's shooting 50 from the field, 46 from 3, and 75 from the line. Obviously, those shooting numbers are going to come down, but you watch him and he just
looks so much
more
decisive. What was the
3
number again, Fred?
46. I don't think it's staying there.
What? How many attempts?
I don't know. Not a ton. It's 5 games.
Okay.
Yeah.
There have been like some 3 of 5 nights and stuff.
Yeah. And he is, and there have been nights where, you know, he just comes in and he's just gunning right when he comes in, right? Just like 5 shots in 6 minutes. And he's going at the rim.
Sounds like every night of his career.
Yep. Exactly. But you know what? Most nights of his career are pretty good. And he's going at the rim, and he's this hesitance grew over the last year, right? Like, part of the thing that made Russ great when he was an MVP level player was this constant aggression, that he was just a force. And even on nights when he shot 7 for 26, he was just an unstoppable force in getting to where he wanted to go, right? Even if the decision-making wasn't there and the shot wasn't falling or whatever it was. And that was an element he kind of lost over the last year. He's playing that sort of style over these last 5 games. And the thing that I didn't know if it was going to happen or not was, would he embrace coming off the bench? And so far, the returns are good. Even though
the
Lakers
aren't. This?
Yeah,
Sam,
I know. What is happening here?
I mean,
what sort
of
the parallel universe is this?
This guy, you know, we're ready for him to go on a, you know, pay attention to the Cleveland Cavaliers monologue. And he wants to talk about positivity around the 2-7.
Well, it's okay, because Fred, this is going to go down as your premature victory lap, because you predicted doom and gloom for Russ, and that's not happening right now. So it's okay. We're still checking that box. I will say, you know, super producer Andrew Schleck, can we get like some audio edited into this episode with, you know, cha-ching left and right, because Fred is just, you know, the bill on this segment for him is going to be massive. I mean,
and this wasn't like, just some like, oh, I want to drop in a little, you know,
he just
a sprinkle
took off
in the middle
for 10
of the podcast.
Minutes. Yeah.
He hides at this point. The podcast will probably be titled Russell Westbrook.
Well, look, I watched Lakers Cavs yesterday, and Russ is just, I mean, look, the Cavs pull away in the fourth quarter. Because the Cavs are just a much better team.
But of course, you
want to
talk about the team that lost, the big market.
They're 2-7, gentlemen.
Exactly, because I've got that East Coast bias, or that coastal bias. You know, I'm just wanting to talk about. Never want to talk about the Midwest. I never talk about the Thunder. I never talk about Jakob Poeltl. I only want to talk about the coastal teams.
Jakob would look good in a Laker jersey, by the way.
Come on, guys, it's fun. There is so little that is fun on that team.
And Russell Westbrook kind of finding some of his force for a five-game stretch that we haven't seen
since he
was in Washington is
and the
fun.
Fred, the
we've
fans,
really lowered the bar.
You know
for
what
team.
I like most about it? It takes some of the obsession over his play away, and maybe we can all start looking at Anthony Davis as a reason why the Lakers are struggling. And the fact that in the bubble he looked like, uh-oh, he's going to be a top three NBA player, and now he doesn't look anywhere near that. And they're 2-7, in part because their supposed best player at these career arcs is not playing well. Or he's not playing to his potential. He's still a solid player.
They defend the other like part crazy. Of it too is LeBron is just not shooting the ball.
LeBron's 38. Like LeBron was supposed to hand this thing off to Davis. You know what I mean? Like that was the plan, correct?
You're not wrong. You're not wrong.
But Fred's right, and I was trying to grab the shooting splits. I mean, LeBron's shooting terribly, and he's below Westbrook at this point, which to your point, Slater, is, you know, that the focus should come off of Russ. I think it's largely on AD. It's largely on LeBron. It's on the roster construction. The way they play is just not sustainable. You know, they're a good defensive team, but they just, you know, no NBA team is going to defend at that level for 48 minutes and try to kickstart their offense and stay in transition and avoid half court. And they do it in spurts. But eventually, you know, they miss a few shots. They end up slowing down a bit. And a team like the Cavs, like we saw on Sunday night, pulls away. So, Fred, let's kick it back to you with the perfect segue there, because I'm a pro at this, or at least I try to be. Your Cavs, you know, they were in the mud with the Lakers for a while. And then you look up, and it's, you know, Donovan Garland, and the rest of that cast. And Mobley having his way a little bit with Davis. And they're pretty damn good, man. They're 8-1. Slater and I are going to see them this week when they play the Kings and the Warriors. So I look forward to that. But these Cavs are right there with Milwaukee at the top of the standing so far.
Yeah. I mean, I think, honestly, I was wrong about the Cavs. Like, I thought they had a chance to win 50 before they traded for Donovan Mitchell. And I thought they had a chance to be good to really good with Donovan Mitchell. And they are still, like, way better than I thought they would be. And part of that is because another thing that I can say that I was wrong about was when I was covering from a Knicks
angle,
obviously. You're
wrong about it, aren't
you? I'm wrong all the time. I don't know why anybody listens to this podcast. When I was covering the Knicks angle of the Donovan Mitchell stuff this summer, when everybody and their mother thought that the Knicks were going to end up getting him, part of my general framing of the coverage was that the Knicks are trying to trade for the first star in the door. And when you trade for the first star in the door, you have to make sure that guy is like a superstar. Because if you give up a star package to get somebody, you're not really going to be left with very much, either to get him a number two elsewhere or to maybe raise a number two from your organization because you probably traded that potential number two to Utah. And is Donovan Mitchell really that level of player was kind of my framing. You know, he had never made an All-NBA team, and, you know, he had never been, like, you know, the best two-way guy on a team. And the way that he has played in Cleveland is like he saw, and look, I was in the majority in thinking that way, right? The way he's played in Cleveland is like he saw all of that and is like, no, you're all idiots. He is playing unquestionably like an All-NBA player. I mean, if he keeps it up this way and Cleveland continues to be at the top of the standings, and they lead the league in net rating, by the way,
yep.
I mean, he's going to be on MVP ballots. I mean, he's averaging 31. He's doing it on extremely efficient scoring. He's playing the best defense he's played in years. He's like really trying on defense, as if, I don't know if it's the change in environment. I don't know if he heard all the noise about his defense over the summer. I don't know what, but like he's always had the physical capabilities of playing defense. He's got a really long wingspan. He's athletic. I mean, I don't. Maybe he's just a lot more comfortable because he's got Mobley and Allen behind him.
Yeah,
those
I was going to say,
excellent.
To me, that's, I mean, you know, he had Rudy all those years.
But he had Rudy Gobert.
I know. But Mobley and Allen is, I mean, that's you're doubling your support there. They have the second best defensive rating so far, just so you know. Just the Bucks are the only team.
Remember, Mitchell came out as, like, considered a defensive prospect. The offense surprised a lot of people. He thought it was going to be like, ooh, you know, athletic, rangy guard. He's got a good wingspan. So I think it's there. He just seems to be more invested. You know, that Utah situation, as we all know, got so stale. I think that had something to do with it. And remember, he went through a lot of like minor, like ankle injuries, especially like in those playoffs that we remember so well. Like he was kind of hobbled. So he looks very good right now. But I don't want to hear the early MVP talk. We're like 8 games in or something.
Really? I mean, it's almost 10, man. It's 9 games.
Whoa, almost 10?
I'm just saying, right. Like I would be surprised at this point. Let me see if he's not a top. I mean, he might wind up on ballots.
We haven't even had a Bontemps straw poll yet.
That's your past life.
Mitchell, we can veer away from MVP talk or whatever, but he's been next level. I mean, he's certainly playing at an all-NBA caliber level. Like, there's no question. This is easily the best basketball he's ever played. He's carrying them. And offensively, I mean, I know they start 2 non-3-point shooters with Mobley and Allen, but Mobley is so active, such a good passer, such a good cutter. Allen is such a good cutter and screener even. Ben Taylor at NBA.com did an amazing breakdown that people should go check out about earlier this week, a video breakdown of the Cavaliers and all the creative ways they're using screens to get guys open. And it helps so much when you've got Garland, who missed the beginning of the year with knee injury and is now back, and you've got Mitchell. Like, that's maybe the best pull-up jump shooting tandem in the Eastern Conference that you can have at the top of your offense. And you have that, plus creative screening, plus guys who can cut and dive and pass. And it's like, that is unbelievably difficult to guard. And you match that with a top 5 defense. It's like, holy crap, this team is, I think they're legit. Like, I think they're really legit and they're intact for years to come.
I was going to say, so Slater is correct that it is relatively early, right? But in terms of what the Cavs chose to do here last summer, I do find it really interesting and see it as a reminder to the rest of the league to not only be opportunistic, but to be bold, right? Because Donovan had his eyes on the Knicks. We know the personal history to that part of the country, and everybody thought that was going to happen, but Kobe Altman and his front office decided to roll the dice. It does make me think, and again, we'll hit this later, but you think about the Kevin Durant situation in Brooklyn. Like, sure, his list might be Phoenix and Miami. At least it was a couple of months ago. And then I think a lot of front office folks are inevitably wired to feel like, well, I can't go against what the star player might want because then he might not be happy and it might not work out. There are, I think, gray area situations like the Donovan one where it is working out. He appears to be really enjoying himself. So it wasn't completely scripted by him, but it sure looks good so far. You know, I do wonder if, you know, that might be something that is in Kevin Durant's future. Maybe it's not a Phoenix or Miami. Maybe it's a New Orleans, something like that, where if you're winning games every night, it's amazing that guys are typically happy when that's the case. Slater, let's throw the ball to you and get into your pick, either your premature victory lap or your actual victory lap.
I got a slight victory lap. Remember our preseason podcast where we were, you know, had all these different categories? Remember the it was bad vibes, good team.
Yep.
I warned you about the Timberwolves.
You're gonna take mine, damn it. Yeah, that's your victory lap. That's my premature victory lap. So we can team up on this one.
Yeah. You know, it's just set up like the pressure, right? In normal years, what are they, like 4-5? Like, in the last decade, if they were 4-5, there'd be a lot of Timberwolves fans that are like, oh, nice. You're showing a little life early this season. Like, it's a lot of pressure on this team. And, you know, you have D'Angelo Russell really struggling to shoot in a contract year. You have what was always going to be a very difficult to fit front court, you know, trying to pair Towns and Gobert. And then now, I mean, the problem everybody's starting to see is, you know, you have who I think is the most important player to your future, Anthony Edwards. And you have him coming out and making it quite clear that, you know, he's not as comfortable playing in the style of play that you have now fully committed to. I mean, you are, you know, how many years is Towns and Gobert are under contract on maxes for the next 4 or 5 years? And he's sitting there basically telling the world he likes playing small.
So they're 5-5. They got Fred's Knicks tonight. So by the time the pod comes out, they might be back on the winning side of the ledger.
Well, everybody's playing tonight. So
yeah, exactly. But yeah, man, that Anthony Edwards quote was a doozy. Where he, I'm paraphrasing, but he basically says that, you know, everybody talks about how Edwards has not been dunking at all this season. So he clearly got a little defensive and said, you know, how am I supposed to dunk when I got bigs in the lane all the time? I need a runway. And this is on the heels of, you know, you talk about bad vibes. Karl Anthony Towns making that weird comment about Edwards eating Popeye's chicken. And, you know, and then, and that is a real thing, you know, that, that Edwards is known to have come in a little on the thicker side, which is not ideal, you know, given kind of the momentum he had from last season. So, yeah, they don't look great. And then Rudy in general, Rudy's always been such kind of a unique guy, in not only in terms of, you know, body type, skill set, what he brings to the table, but he's a veteran who, like, in terms of vibes, in terms of personality dynamics with teammates, you know, it was always not necessarily off in Utah, but just a little different there, where you didn't see him connect with his group as much as you would probably want him to. And you wonder if that's happening out in Minnesota a little bit too.
Yeah. The only person who Anthony Edwards has dunked on this year is Rudy Gobert. And it's, I couldn't.
Well played.
I mean, I will say people love to crap on Rudy Gobert. And so a lot of people said, see, they got Rudy Gobert and now they put Anthony Edwards in a bad situation and all of that. I'm like, don't you think Anthony Edwards should figure out another way to play with a rim diving center? Like, don't you think he should figure out a way? Okay, well, if everybody's converging on me, don't you think he can figure out, all right, well, there are some shooters out there. Maybe I can find Towns in the corner. Or maybe I'll be able to hit Gobert on lobs. I mean, that was a thing that Utah used to do all the time, right? Mike Conley will get in the lane a little bit and he'll throw a little lob to Gobert when the help defender comes up because Conley is a floater. Look, I'm not arguing that it is easier to score when you have a rim diving center right there. And the way that the Wolves will weaponize Gobert too, for the most part, is they'll use him as an offensive rebounder, which keeps him closer to the rim. And I cover a center who has the most extreme version of that in Mitchell Robinson, where he is just always in the paint and it messes up the Knicks offense all the time. But, like, you know, basketball is also about adjustments. And I just thought it was a weird, I just thought it was a weird look. And I like Anthony Edwards.
I mean, listen, he's like obviously a very likable dude. Immaturity. You know, but, which is natural.
And he's an
right?
honest
he's a young
quote,
dude.
Which
yeah.
we like. The one thing I'd say is this to me, the critique of the Wolves' move for Gobert was always like it was going all in way too early. Like it's like, oh, you got a pair of, you know, sevens and Texas Hold'em or whatever, and you're like all in. Where it was like, you know, Anthony Edwards is so early in his growth curve. And to me, like, again, I think he's the guy long term you're thinking about building around. They have mortgaged all their future first-round picks to you know, utilize for the Anthony Edwards era for something that I think logically was always going to be very odd for him to, like, you know, it's an odd team construction around him. I mean, you could say they're going all in on the end of the Karl Anthony Towns era. Okay, fine. I just don't – I'm not sure that was ever a good idea.
Well, and I also think, like always, there's layers to this, right? They have a new ownership group coming in that is – glitzy, that is big money. I mean, they're all big money, but this is, you know, it's A-Rod, it's Mark Lohr, and a franchise that has, you know, been run by Glenn Taylor for a very long time. And so there's this pressure to kind of go big or go home. You got Tim Conley coming in from Denver, you know, another very, you know, high-end flashy transaction on the front office level, a guy that had done great work with the Nuggets. So, you know, that's, and then you have the small market factor, which is that there is always a sense of desperation with which I think those teams do their business, that where you run the risk of running into something like this, that at least early on, like you said, Slater, looks like, you know, maybe they did go too early. And especially when, you know, that Nets thing I wrote yesterday, as I'm looking at the Durant landscape and then getting reminded that it's like, damn, man, 4 first and a pick swap, you know, in that deal. I mean, that is just so much for a guy that right now is not having the impact they were hoping for.
So much. I when Anthony Edwards was having that quote, I kept thinking back to last year when Gobert was still on Utah, and Edwards said that he didn't think of Gobert as much of a rim protector, and he thought Porzingis was a
better. Yeah, he also rim didn't protector. He say Kristaps Porzingis was the best the league's best rim protector.
Yep.
That was a wild quote.
That was great. I always appreciate the honesty. It's just you're totally right about the vibes. Like, it's just like everything we're talking about is vibes. You know, it's all.
Did you guys see the play? Somebody, you know, put out the sorry to whoever did, but like it was a tape of Edwards. It might have been on an ATO, but he just stood on the right wing for the like entire 24-second shot clock violation. The offense was moving around him. He was like hands on his hips, just standing on the
wing. Ooh-wee. No, I didn't see that.
Yeah. You take a look at it.
Well, and Slater, you know this dynamic well, and I know this is apples to oranges, but you know, the Warriors all season, their story so far has been about integrating the old and the new, but they have
two timelines.
That's the extreme, right? This is like the championship Hall of Fame bound old guys merging with the unproven, you know, super young guys. The Timberwolves have a little bit of that. Like you kind of said it a second ago, you know, the Towns factor and the idea that for us, I think we're kind of glossing over the Towns effect on the choice to do Gobert, but it's not a small one. Like whatever hope they still had of Karl Anthony Towns being part of a title contending team in Minnesota, they didn't want to lose that hope. So you are partly investing, you know, to kind of maximize that in addition to whatever you think Edwards is going to be. But that gap age-wise, that gap, you know, story-wise between Towns and Edwards is pretty significant. And early on, I mean, they got growing pains. I mean, it is early. We got a long ways to go. Slater, do you have yourself a premature victory lap now that you're out here flexing about the T-Wolves' demise?
I do, and I will give it to you after this ad break.
Hey, well done. We'll be right back.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, even Slater gets stuff wrong, so I want to hear about that stuff. What did you screw up, buddy?
I was extremely down on the Portland Trail Blazers to the point that I didn't even think they were going to make the play-in. And what are they now at this point? Like 7-3, 6-3, something like that. But beyond the record, it's just like, you know.
You're making me work here, man. Is your Wi-Fi broken at your house? All right,
no,
Portland.
I'm in the middle of an answer. I don't want to be
6-3. I can't be giving the people bad information. They're 6-3.
Okay.
Like you said, everybody plays tonight. They have Miami on the road.
That's
tonight.
A tough one.
And then Charlotte, New Orleans, Dallas. Yeah, but they've been good so far.
Yeah, but Dame. You know, before Lillard strained his calf, which, you know, it's a concern, but before he strained his calf, he looked like, you know, vintage Damian Lillard for a few games. That's a good sign. The front office pickups that they made this summer, you know, the way they rearranged the roster to be faster, more athletic, smaller around Damian Lillard, I think is a very good sign. Gary Payton II sounds like, you know, maybe middle, late this month, he'll be back. But also, you know, they went into Phoenix the other night without Lillard and without Simons, who's out with like a little foot issue, and beat the Suns. Jeremy Grant, I think, had 30 that night. He took about 9 steps before he hit the game winner, and it wasn't called. But he hit a game winner. Justice Winslow was good in that game. You asked me what I was wrong about. I thought it was a bad season ahead for the Blazers, and I no longer think that.
How about their new starting guard, 19-year-old Shaedon Sharpe, who is good. Like, Chauncey Billups clearly loves him. He had a quote about him playing right away, because obviously he has such little experience playing at a high level, and he just comes in and is given minutes. And Chauncey said, to paraphrase, you know, we lost for half a season to get this kid. I'm not going to not play him. And he just looks ready. I mean, he is smooth. He is unbelievably athletic. He's shooting the ball well. Like, he's working in that starting lineup. Like, man, he was a risky draft pick, obviously, because you just didn't quite know what you were going to get, because there was just no tape on him going against top guys. But man, he is.
You thought he would like have an occasional like unbelievable highlight dunk, but like generally would be lost out there, right? Like one of those like hyper athletes that needs a couple years to like even understand what NBA basketball is. I agree with you. Doesn't look like that. Like, is playing smart, hitting threes, like, you know, moving well out there.
So guys, I'm gonna adjust on the fly, and even though Slater and I were on opposite sides of the T-Wolves debate, and this is my my attempt to get into some of the contenders that we just don't talk about enough on this show, a team that this is not exactly going out on a limb, but a team that I've been high on all the way through with the rest of the entire planet, is the Milwaukee Bucks. I just didn't necessarily know they were going to be this good without Chris Middleton, 9-0, playing some great ball. And then the other one we'll get into in a second is the Phoenix Suns, which, you know, we talk about the bad vibes discussion, Slater, that we had some time ago. You know, we go into the season with the Robert Sarver stuff, you know, with the Jay Crowder situation where he's sidelined and waiting for a trade to go to a new team. You know, they had some bad news this week with Cam Johnson tearing his meniscus. He's going to be out for quite some time. But, you know, those two teams right in the mix. Let me throw it back to the Bucks and get your guys' thoughts there. Giannis is, you talk about MVP discussion. I mean, he's right there with Luka right now. He would be my MVP at this very early juncture. Just putting up monster numbers, and again, doing it without Middleton, which unfortunately he's had to do a lot without Middleton in kind of recent Bucks history. Coming in at 32.6 points a game, 12.9 boards, 5.8 assists, a nice dandy 11.8 plus minus on the year. The Bucks are legit and they're having fun, and certainly to be dealt with here.
They profiled as the team that would just like attack the regular season in like kind of a dominant fashion. You know, flamed out in a disappointing way in the second round, got that extended off season, had the motivation factor heading into the season. Giannis is just like wired to just like care on a nightly basis during an 82-game marathon. And it just, the force he brings is, I think, unlike anything in a regular season environment that teams normally face. Brook Lopez remains like, you know, an underrated, just like, you know, defensive hub. Drew Holiday on the perimeter hounding you. And the fact that they clearly like are about it early in the season, like they're just such a difficult team to play. You know, when you're just like trying to figure out your rotation, you know, it's just, they're so ready made. And that leads to what's been 9-0. And to me, what looks, you know, their parity has been one of the stories early in the season, but I think we're talking about a potential, like, you know, 60, mid 60s win team if they stay healthy and an easy one seed.
Yeah, I think that's really plausible. They they look amazing. And I think, honestly, one of the big things for them is, like, Giannis is going to Giannis, and he's absolutely right there in the MVP conversation, and he will be.
Oh, baby. Is he the early favorite, Fred? Has he beat out Donovan Mitchell?
I love that I he turned Giannis into a verb. Purtle.
Yeah,
right.
Purtle.
DPOY. My straw poll. Sorry, go ahead.
Maybe Giannis, actually, for that. Yeah, opponents are shooting like 48% on shots that Giannis contests at the rim. Like, it's just crazy that he is able to be this kind of weak side defender while also being the force he is on offense. But the big thing for them, I think, and you mentioned him, is Brook Lopez. I mean, he missed most of last year with the back injury. I mean, you got a 7-footer who has an injury history. He's already had foot injuries, earlier in his career. And he has a back injury that forces him to miss almost the whole season. He's in his 30s, and you don't know, right? And defensively, Brook Lopez has looked like exactly what you would want. He's been so great for them around the rim. And that's just such an important part of their defense. You know, we talk about Cleveland, where they have Mobley and they have Allen. That's just two guys who are always going to protect the rim. And Milwaukee can kind of match that, right? Because you got Giannis, who is an unbelievable weak side defender, and you got Brook Lopez, who can just 29 in the paint and can actually pull off some different kinds of coverages too if you need it. By the way, November 16th, Cleveland, Milwaukee, circle it. That is going to be really fun.
Where's that game at, Fred?
I don't remember.
Cleveland, Boston in Cleveland was like the game of the regular season so far. That was really good basketball.
Indeed. All right. In that same vein, a team that, again, I was wrong on this one because I thought that the vibes were going to get the best of them. The Suns, guys, they are doing their thing. You know, DeAndre Ayton goes into the year conceivably with the kind of his dauber down because of the contract stuff. And then, you know, we thought he'd be on the move and he's in the Durant discussions. And lo and behold, they're kind of bringing the band back, all except for Jay Crowder. You know, Cam Johnson sliding into that starting role. A few quick, you know, notes on them so far. Devin Booker doing Devin Booker things, 27 a game on the scoring front, 5.1 assists. You know, Chris Paul got off to a slow start, at least we thought, but now I think he's leading the NBA in assists again, 10.2 and a monster plus minus. So, you know, Chris has been good. Mikal Bridges, you know, it's the same. We know what they do. This Cam Johnson news is really unfortunate, and I do wonder how they're going to handle that absence. You know, and it's a unique one, right? Because you do literally have Jay Crowder sitting right there, but Jay has not been happy with the way his situation was handled, and I don't know where his head is at. So, in general, though, the Suns looking dangerous again and looking like that team that we saw, you know, give the Bucks a pretty good run in the finals a couple years ago.
Sam, I'm going to put you on the spot for a second. Yeah. What do you think ends up happening with the Jay Crowder situation?
I think there's stuff happening in real time right now, and I guess I said I don't know where Jay's head is at because that's the most important thing to me. Is that, you know, if I'm handicapping, I probably would lean against the idea of him just putting the old Suns jersey back on and helping him out. You know, the last sense I got was that that would not be the case. And part of that is that in terms of a guy's market value, you know, it's early in terms of trade season, but, you know, it's late enough that, as one executive had told me that I talked to the last couple of days, teams are seeing the cracks in their foundation by this point and starting to get concerned. And Jay is a guy like, sure, Kevin Durant would be great. Well, if you want Kevin, you're going to have to wait for the Nets to lose a lot of games, and that's going to have to develop. If you want Jay Crowder, he's sitting right there. You just got to give up enough to get him. And I think the market is going to be and is pretty robust there. But, you know, obviously no real traction that I'm aware of anywhere specifically just yet.
Yeah, but if you're Phoenix, there's no reason to – like, you know, Jay Crowder for a pick or something could make a lot of sense, like, you know, in a vacuum. But Phoenix needs, like, a guy that can help now, right? And anybody trading for Jay Crowder is theoretically, hey, you know, we're trying to win right now. We need a piece. Wouldn't want to give up a piece that helps win now. That's where, like, I think the trade imbalances made it very difficult for them to deal him.
Right.
Because we know how Phoenix operates. They don't even have, like, you know, G League operation. They don't even barely scout. Like, they care about, like, win now veterans in that locker room at this moment. Jay Crowder is that. It's just tough for me to see a trade that makes sense that gets them a win now veteran for a win now veteran, because usually you need you know, kind of like dueling motives to make trade partners.
It's too bad, too, because he's one of those guys that, you know, it's almost PJ Tucker-esque where, you know, all you could ask for is for all of your old teams to wish they still had you. You know what I mean? And I think that his son's teammates would feel that way. His Heat teammates would feel that way. You know, it wasn't as impactful. Well, he was good with Memphis. But, you know, like going back to the Utah days, like Jay has been a difference maker for quite some time. And you look at him age-wise and whatnot. I hate seeing guys on the shelf when they can be good ball players. You know, whether it's John Wall last year, situations like that. So I hope they figure it out soon.
Can I tell you my favorite early season ridiculous stat so far?
Indeed.
Damian Lee is shooting 46% on threes and 29% on twos.
That floater's not falling, I guess.
There's your... I love that. I hope that keeps up. I don't know what the largest difference is in a single season, but that's glorious.
Good stuff, gentlemen. All right. That, I think, are we through our segment on Victory Laps?
No, I got a thing that I got wrong, and I think everyone got wrong.
Let's hear it.
So I'm not a big college basketball guy, and I don't purport to be. I loved college basketball growing up, and I've gotten away from it as I've been covering the NBA. And I do not consider myself a draft expert at all. The general sentiment coming into this year was this is a weak draft class. So I bought into it. Okay, it's a weak draft class. Probably is. All these people know a lot and they do it for a living. But even people who are experts will make mistakes. Doesn't look like such a weak draft class to me.
No.
I mean, there are some, like, Banchero looks really good. Jabari Smith has struggled with his shot, but Keegan Murray looks really good. Jaden Ivey has had really good moments. Benedict Mathurin might end up winning Rookie of the Year. He has been incredible in Indiana. We talked about Shaedon Sharpe, who's been great. Dyson Daniels has had good moments. Jeremy Sochan is starting in San Antonio. Jalen Williams in OKC just started playing a little more, and he's had really nice moments. Looks like he's good in pick and rolls. And Jalen Duren has been good. And you just go through it. Tari Eason has had good moments in Houston. It's like there are good-looking rookies. Walker Kessler has been good in Utah. It's like this is a pretty good rookie class.
I agree. And up top, Fred, watching Banchero has been fun. You know, like his Warriors game the other day, Draymond's perspective after that game on Banchero, and seeing, you know, a championship future Hall of Fame vet like Draymond break down Banchero's competitive fabric in the way he did, I thought it was just not the kind of thing we typically see, because he wasn't just talking about skill set and talent. He was talking about makeup.
You know, who's the last young guy I can remember? You know, Draymond's selective with, like, when he goes over the top with his praise.
Right.
Luka. Yeah. Rookie year Luka, he was like, he had a similar, just like he was gushed about him post game.
Right.
And, you know, Draymond has been very on board the Banchero bandwagon from back, like, draft night. And so part of it is like Draymond's, it's a little bit of like, see, I'm right type deal. But it does, I agree with you. It does say a lot.
Yeah, and he just looks like he's been in the league for 3-4 years. I mean, he played the Kings a couple days after that, and, you know,
30 and 14. I think he had.
Just in beast mode. And again, it says the same thing. You know, teams doing what's best basketball wise for their roster, not being obsessed with player, you know, interest or preferences, if you will. You know, Paolo didn't work out for the Magic. You know, we talked to John Hammond back in Summer League, the Magic GM, about the process leading to getting Banchero. They had to take a little bit of a risk because there were these signals getting sent their way that Paolo might not have wanted to be in Orlando. Well, you know, now it seems like it's working pretty well, and he's certainly finding his way.
And you know what? I'm going to turn it to another rookie too. We, for so long, the Pacers were thought of as the team that just wanted to be in the middle. How are they ever going to rebuild if they just want to be in the middle? And you look at the two guys who they have who are going to be the core of this next generation of Pacers, and Tyrese Halliburton is going to be an all-star. Like, for sure. I would bet anything on that. And Mathurin has been one of the best bench players in the league this year. I mean, he's averaging 20 a game off the bench. He's shooting 43% on threes. He can dunk on anyone and everyone. He's incredible in transition. that dude is really good. Like, he's not gonna be really good. He is really good. And he's a athletic wing, which is exactly what anybody wants. I mean, I don't think the Pacers are in such a terrible position right now with those two guys.
I agree. I think, Fred, we'll preview the pod for next week. I think next week we should be talking a lot about the different teams that we thought were going to tank and how they didn't, and the idea in general, to your point, that the flattening of the lottery odds, 14% for the worst team, but then three teams having that same percentage, essentially, like, that has been a game changer. And I think teams like Indiana, teams like Miami, where I wrote last week about kind of an old story where the year they got Bam Adebayo, they start, 10-31. The Heat front office is thinking about blowing it up, but that's just not really what they do. So they let that team ride it out. They're basically 500. It looks like the worst type of purgatory that we always talk about, that what you should not do is just be 500. Well, they end up, you know, getting Bam Adebayo, late lottery. So it is weird how it works out that way. And I think we're going to see more of that going forward. You know, the Pacers are a good example of it. Gentlemen, I'm going to finish as promised on the Nets front, just because it's extremely topical and also going to have a significant ripple effect, I think, on the trade market going forward. You know, the question of whether or not anything happens with their roster is one where I think most of the league is watching to see what they do, you know, potentially before deciding how they might see all kinds of other different scenarios. The latest, of course, as we talk, Kyrie Irving, is he two games into the suspension? Does that sound about right?
Yes. Yeah.
Two games in, it's at least five games.
Two Nets wins, by the way.
Two Nets wins, which is fine. Great, cool. You know, it's funny, Slater, earlier.
Well, I just mean, like, it had looked like outside looking in, the vibes are a little
for
bit
sure
improved.
No, that wasn't a shot at you. I noticed, on Twitter, somebody reacted, a reader, to, we had a promotion of an anonymous executive quote where they had said, you know, when is Durant going to say, get me the F out of here again? And they said, well, they just won two games. That the bigger picture is what obviously matters more. Kevin Durant does not want to be Superman every single night in order to get this Nets team barely into the playoffs. That's not what he envisions for this part of his career. And so around the league, a lot of the people I talked to, and like I said, it was 11 different folks, there is still an assumption that, you know, the Nets will have to wake up and realize at some point that this track they're on does not lead where they want it to lead, and they're going to have to, you know, break it all down. And we'll see if they do. Now, the Kyrie component, first and foremost, has to be resolved. Arsham Sharania had reported that the Nets gave him an action list item of six items, rather, that he has to satisfy in order to return to the team. And it's everything from, you know, just kind of education on the anti-Semitism front to conversations with Joe Tsai. I don't have the list in front of me, but it's a lot of the type of stuff you would imagine, you know, considering that the type of messaging and kind of spirit of the things he put out in the universe. Does Kyrie return? That's the first question. I would say it feels like he likely will, but he's also historically a pretty stubborn guy, so he has to make his way through that list, and we don't know yet if he will. And we can't answer the rest of the Nets questions until we know that one. But, you know, but chaos out there, and you know, what are you guys' quick thoughts on where it's all going?
I have no idea, Sam. I am so over predicting for this team. It's not going to a title, I don't think. I don't think it's going. I mean, do I think it's plausible that Kyrie comes back more enlightened and more in tune with helping the team, and they win some games because they have talent people and they end up finishing around where they did last year, and maybe they get into the playoffs via the play-in tournament? Sure. I don't see a significantly better outcome than that. And I think diving way below that is significantly more likely. Look, they also just don't really have the personnel beyond Kyrie and Durant. You know, Simmons, we just have not seen him look like Ben Simmons yet. And I think it's possible he gets better if he gets healthier, but we don't know. And the rest of the roster is just significantly lacking in defensive talents, like Royce O'Neal, and that's about it. Claxton can be good around the rim against the right sorts of matchups, but he still gets bullied. And, you know, the defense is extremely worrisome. And
they're like a playing team. I mean, they're like they're like a playing team. How about the head coach situation?
Right.
I didn't even mention it.
They still haven't hired Udoka.
Yeah, again, just handicapping, and because I don't have clarity, admittedly, but I have asked around. If I'm handicapping, I think that's still going to happen with Ime obviously suspended, Boston Celtics head coach, and all the baggage that comes with his situation out there. You know, what better time for Brooklyn to add more baggage seems super logical. But basketball-wise, I was a little surprised when I talked to all these execs. You talk to some people, now admittedly, some folks who know Ime pretty well around the league saying, you know, if you cut out all the noise that obviously surrounds him with good reason, that basketball-wise, you know, there was some sentiment that it was going to really not fix what ails them, but really significantly improve what ails them.
Sam, can I cut you off?
I finished, so I didn't give you a chance.
if you cut out all the noise, it'll work. Are we just going to say that about every single hire, trade, signing, whatever that the Nets do? You can't cut out all the noise for literally everyone. That's the justification for every move. If you cut out all the noise with Ben Simmons, it'll work. If you cut out all the noise with Kyrie, it'll work. If you cut out all the noise with everybody else, it'll work. Well, there's noise. There's noise. There is somebody screaming in your ear. I mean, it's you keep bringing in all the noise, and then you're like, I don't know why I can't hear myself think. Well, it's because you keep willfully bringing in noise. It's just insane. It's insane, Sam. It's insane. This team needs, they're doing endorsements on jerseys now. This team needs a big Toomey patch on its jersey to signify all the baggage it's just lugging around everywhere. I don't get it. It's you know, Bill Simmons always said who would say, like, you can have one off-kilter guy in your locker room. And if you have a good locker room, you rein them in, but you can't have two. I think that was whatever the rule was.
Yes.
And it's like the Nets have just like compiled all of this drama together. And then I'm like, why is there drama? I don't understand.
That is fair.
It's just.
Can I be positive briefly?
No, that's no fun.
Kevin Durant looks great, you know, 31.5 a game right now. I think he's shooting 52%. Did you see that? I'm sure you did. Crossover on Gafford the other day.
Oh, yes. Daniel Gafford.
That's as, like, embarrassed as I've seen a defender in a long time.
First tweet I saw, again, I wish I could give credit. I don't remember who, but it was a caption on the video that just said, this man has family.
Daniel Gafford, who has been disappointing. Daniel Gafford.
All right, we're not going down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, we are not going down the Daniel Gafford.
You don't want to talk about Daniel Gafford?
No.
You don't want to talk about Daniel Gafford underwhelming when he's got that extension impending?
No, so I will, though, talk about
KD's
it later.
KD's 34, but, you know, Sam, you kind of were somewhat wrapping it, you know, into, like, the bigger picture, you know.
Yeah, that's trade good market. News for Durant and the Nets, maybe, is his market, I think. I really did get a sense talking to people, like, they just got reminded who Kevin Durant is, and then also in the context of their own teams underperforming, I feel like some of that preseason optimism that might have, you know, tricked certain teams into thinking that they were fine without a Kevin Durant, you know, I do think there's, you know, teams looking at it right now going, all right, what are we willing to put on the table to get that guy?
Okay, so Sam, who's your surprise? Let's say we live in a world where we know Kevin Durant got traded, and he got traded to a surprise team, not Phoenix. Not, you know, the teams we conventionally hear. What's a team that it's
that's
like,
hard
because, oh, you know,
like,
it could make sense now.
When, like, one of the execs said, he said, I'd probably, you know, forget how he phrased it, but that he'd be confident that the Nets and Kevin had an unofficial agreement here where they're not going to ship him off to some market he doesn't want to go to. So I think the list is unofficially smaller than it might have otherwise been. The one that I just think is super interesting, especially here as we talk, and I keep having to go back to the standings, but, you know, the Pelicans have been good, but they've dropped a few games. They've had injury stuff. So good, but not great. Currently 5-4. You know, if they don't look like,
you know, not only just a playoff team, but something greater, it's hard for me to not look at that situation and go, man, I get it. The hope that comes with Zion in that market, Brandon Ingram, all these pieces, but they have depth, they have star power, they have picks. And if they had Kevin Durant, I don't know which type of deal you guys would prefer there, if any, you know, they would be on that short list in the West and trying to win the whole damn thing.
That's a good one. They have young guys too. They could go Herb Jones. They could go Trey Murphy. Both those guys are really good young players. Trey Murphy's become really solid. You can throw Valanciunas in there for
Isn't
salary.
Isn't it not Trey? Didn't we talk about that? What's his real name?
No, it is Trey Murphy. It's either Trey Murphy or Ken Murphy the third.
Oh, that's what it was.
Okay. Trey Murphy the third. But yeah, you could throw some young guys in there. I don't think they're including Ingram or something like that. I think that ship has sailed, but you're right. I mean, McCollum, Zion.
Why though? And I'm just for the sake of the podcast exercise, I've kind of turned on this a little bit because I was, Slater, you said it earlier, I was coming into the year as Kevin's old and, you know, he's balding and his best days are behind him. That's just not true. I know, I'm being mean. You're going to see me next week with hair falling out because the karma is going to get the best of me. But he's incredible and he's got 3 years left on his deal. Like, that's where, I mean, my God, the Lakers are betting on, you know, LeBron at a much later stage. And the Pelicans, like we said earlier, Minnesota, Sacramento, Indiana, small market teams are supposed to act somewhat desperately. You have a chance to get Kevin Durant. I mean, unless you had intel that indicated that he wouldn't show up, which would obviously be a problem, and I've certainly not been told that's the case, and nor do I know how he sees that situation. But why not for Brandon Ingram, Fred?
I just think I'm under the assumption that it would take a lot of picks, and I'm just not going to give up all those picks and Ingram if I'm New Orleans.
How about just the pick swap with the Lakers this year? That's right. A pretty high value pick.
Yeah, there's a lot. You guys know
that's part of the problem with the Pelicans picks. You can't trade a pick swap.
You can't. Like they couldn't trade.
I guess you could just include them. You can include them in the swap. So I take it back.
Yeah, couldn't you just like trade the, you know, ability to either you'll have the Pelicans pick or you can swap.
So. Well, there's. I think what you're getting at, guys, is there's a lot of scenarios here, and that's where deal making gets done. So you know, there's a good problem to have if you're having to figure out how to construct it. You know, do we focus more on picks or the young stars? Or what does it look like? I think they have to, and I'm stealing this insight from another exec, like they have to get over the idea that it has to meet some Rudy Gobert threshold. Like that, the Gobert deal with Utah was an outlier, and it was the product of a lot of unique circumstances that don't necessarily apply, you know, to other situations going forward. But that one to me is interesting. Do you guys have any other teams that you think are under the radar on
the
something like a Durant deal?
Golden State Warriors.
Seriously, man. I thought about that. Let's go there, Slater. We're going to wrap up on that. I like that.
Oh, no.
No, I'm not kidding.
Why did I even mention?
Come on now. Like, cause
Go ahead.
They're losing.
Yeah, they are losing.
Draymond's coming up on his player option year. We got the preseason situation with Jordan Poole. We have, you know, a lot of evidence already to this point that once they get past their starting five, which have been tremendous, that they just desperately need help. Kevin, I was going to say Kevin saved him once. He didn't necessarily save him, but he certainly, you know, gave him some extra juice, and they had two pretty dominant championships with that guy and almost three. And I know you guys reported in the preseason that it had been considered internally, but not seriously. You know, do you think there's any chance that gets reconsidered?
I think there's one factor that makes it almost impossible. Andrew Wiggins is not trade eligible. He signed an extension. His salary cannot be used in a deal. So, I mean, to match salaries, then you're talking.
Fred,
Clay's in the deal. Draymond's in the deal.
Can I make another ridiculous suggestion that could involve nostalgia and a Wiggins?
Sure.
What about the budding, young, feisty Oklahoma City Thunder? Throw them all in.
That would just be fantastic.
It would be so fun. I mean, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a star.
And he's an impatient star.
He is a freaking star.
I know. You hear me, though, right?
30 a game.
He's impatient. Yeah. That's a problem.
Yeah, I think he's like second tier. I'm not trying to get Andrew to hop on the podcast right now.
Great. You know what? You know what a second tier star means? A first tier star.
I do agree with that.
They got picks. They got everything. I'm being. This is not going to happen, especially
when you don't know what's going on. We've gone down a deep rabbit hole. We're talking Durant.
There's no way, but it would be fun, and you can include Aaron Wiggins, so you could really trade him to a former team with a Wiggins.
There you go. All right, guys, I'm going to cap it there. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, as I rock my green Sac State, shirt here. You know, the best 9-0 team out there is not the Milwaukee Bucks. It's a Hornets football, baby. We are big time and heading towards a Causeway Classic game, Slater. Are you going to join me out there in a couple weeks?
Sure. You're going to have to tell me exactly. Is that against UC Davis, I assume?
At least I saved this self-serving part of the pod for the end of it. Yes.
Is that that's the UC rivalry Davis. With UC Davis?
Yeah, Howard Beck's UC Davis Aggies. The Aggies are playing well.
If I can make it, perhaps I'll be out there. We'll talk about this off the pod, though.
No, I just got to pump up the old alma mater. You know what I mean? 9-0. I don't care what, and it's football, man. 9-0 in football. It's pretty damn good.
Great times in Sacramento.
Indeed. Thank you, boys. And we will do it again next week.